Good morning, PCC Mops. Just gonna do one of these real quick. I would love to open us up in prayer before we get started. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for making it possible for each and every woman to be in this room today. We pray for the moms who couldn't be here as well. Bless the food and beverages to our bodies. Thank you for our children and the opportunity to be their mom, mentor, teacher. Lord, I ask that you guide my words and open our hearts to hear you. May we find connection and fellowship in the discussion afterwards. In the Lord's name we pray. Amen. My name is Ashley Pellissier, also known as Mom, Mommy, Mama, Mom, 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 Mom. And my husband calls me Babe. And to approximately 267 or so students, give or take, Mrs. Pellissier. And I share that with you because I am bringing every part of me to the stage this morning. So prepare yourselves for mom language, some raw marital moments, all things elementary school teacher. And when something resonates with you, you show me one of these. And of course, look forward to story time, because I wouldn't be an elementary school teacher without picture books. To outline our time together, I'm going to begin with sort of a Cliff Notes version of how we got to the here and now, what brings me to the stage this morning, teach you something new, and provide application for this new information, and we'll wrap up with discussion. If you haven't already put two and two together, I am co-speaker coordinator for this MOPS, PCC MOPS. And if I look familiar, that's because I would love to remind you that even after practicing so many times, I incorrectly introduced our very first speaker. So there's that. And I was telling my table, if I had to introduce myself, I probably would have used my maiden name. Like, no. So, yes, essentially I coordinated myself. And I don't know if you've ever had like an out-of-body experience where you stood by watching yourself speak words and you were kind of confused and perplexed as to what was happening, but there was absolutely nothing you could do about it, and it was just happening so fast, and that is exactly why this is happening right now. You see, when Amy was sharing the schedule for this year at MOPS and said there was an opening in October, I clearly blacked out, because when I came to, my name was on the schedule. Since October is Dwarfism Awareness Month, it only seemed fitting I seized the opportunity. Up until this moment, I considered myself an educator to elementary school children. Yet somewhere my subconscious knew that I was put on this planet to educate others. And for that reason, I'm thrilled, and yes, a lot nervous, if I'm being honest, to be here with you this morning. I always told the parents at my back-to-school night that a room full of 10 to 11-year-olds is like my wheelhouse. So talking to adults is just stepping way out of my comfort zone. So please, I invite you to join me on this journey this morning. In fact, I've titled this morning's talk, A Little Perspective, A Pellissier Journey. A journey. My story. My family's story. A story you can take home with you after our time together. And what brings me to the stage? Well, let us begin at the beginning. My very handsome husband, who just stepped in today to hold our baby, and I met in 2008 via Match.com, a dating journey I never anticipated. And while we were dating, we talked about planning a future together. We covered the basics, the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, where we wanted to live, how many kids we wanted to have, and most importantly, where we would be spending the holidays. Agreeing on most of the important life decisions, in 2010, Jared surprised me with a proposal during a horseback trail ride. We were married on April 1st, 2011, no joke. And so our Pellisier journey began. A very long story short, we bought a house, we traveled the world, we established our place in the workforce, and we decided to start trying to expand our family. We practiced with a puppy, we added chickens, and we determined we could keep things alive. And so we embarked on a parenting journey. Fast forward, from early in our marriage to 2015, we were blessed with the arrival of Pepper Jean. She is currently 7 years old, in second grade, and just so cool. She's also me in so many ways, not the like cool part, that's all her. But is anyone else in here parenting themselves? Knowing we wanted more than one child, in 2017, we welcomed our second daughter, Hollis Lucille. She is now 5 years old as of October 4th. She's in TK and could rule the world tomorrow. She is spicy and sweet and smart and very funny. And Jared and I came to a crossroads with number three. We weren't trying, but like not trying. And I decided if I didn't get pregnant before I turned 38, we would be thrilled with our two beautiful girls. My birthday is June 1st. The month before I turned 38, I found out I was pregnant. Thinking we were on a roll with girls, I was shocked to find out we were having a boy. Shelby William was born January 2020, right before the world shut down. He is now 2.5 years old, a total Sour Patch Kid, and so savvy. Scrappy? Savvy. Both. Jared decided we were done having kids at that point. In fact, he was adamant we would be not having any more children. And three was a lot, and he was done. I was a little on the fence, but eventually we decided as a family that our family was complete. He scheduled the vasectomy. He canceled the vasectomy. Never cancel the vasectomy. And a little bit about me. I don't keep things from my husband. I tell him everything. But I kept this very big news from my husband for about a week. I didn't know what to say or how to say it, but eventually I would have to tell him. So I gave Shelby the positive pregnancy test to give to Daddy. Yes, I sent the sacrificial lamb to slaughter. And Jared accepted the news. And this pregnancy felt slightly different than my previous pregnancies. First because, oops, but my hormones felt bigger and more, and I was certain for a moment I was having twins. But after repeated ultrasounds and confirmations, like, you're sure? You're sure there's not two in there? Promise? You don't see? Maybe in the back, maybe on the other side, the top? No. There was only one, and we were excited to find out that we would be having another boy. Brooks Birkeland Pellisier was due to arrive March 2022. And also, for the record, another vasectomy was scheduled. And another vasectomy was canceled. So we are still playing with fire, friends. But I am definitely not pregnant right now that I'm aware of. And just like COVID, I will no longer be testing for that. Too soon? Sorry. But Brooks is ultimately who brings me to the stage this morning. Everything was going as planned with the pregnancy until the third trimester. I've had the same ultrasound tech for all of my pregnancies. We've met. I know about her kids and her family, and so mid-ultrasound, when she starts going, and telling me she couldn't quite get the measurement she was looking for, she very casually suggested I go see a perinatologist. First of all, what is a perinatologist? It was explained to me that this doctor could get better measurements than she could in the office, and I was surprised because up until this point, I had never had to do this before. and I didn't think much of it because, again, we've met. But she didn't seem alarmed, so I brushed it off. And Brooks was always in this, like, super wonky position when getting measured, and I chalked it up to him just being so smooshy in there. And it was the day before Christmas Eve when I met with the perinatologist, alone, because COVID protocols. And I remember her pushing on my belly really hard, and she was, like, going all around. But he looked good in there from what I could tell. And she told me about the parts of his brain that she was looking at, and they looked good. And she was telling me about his body, and that looked good, and his heart had all the chambers and was beating strong. And then she says, "Oh, yeah, I see why your doctor sent you to me. Your baby has a form of skeletal dysplasia. Skeletal dysplasia is, it doesn't look to be a fatal form of skeletal dysplasia, though, and fatal forms of skeletal dysplasia are not compatible with life." You see, I don't know if anyone has ever talked to this doctor about, like, bedside manner, but I would lovingly refer to it as very rough around the edges. But she told me that his head and body were in the 98th and 99th percentiles, which was very consistent with my other kids. And it was his long bones, the bones that connect your arms and legs to your trunk, that were measuring weeks behind for his gestational age. At this stage in the game, growth that far behind wasn't probably going to just catch up. So thus the diagnosis of skeletal dysplasia. Three things. One, my favorite Bible verse is Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." Two, I believe God has a wild sense of humor. Why do I think this? Because I have watched little people shows for years. Years. It all started with the Roloff family and their show, Little People, Big World. Then I fell in love with the cast of Little Women LA. I've seen every episode of every season, and there are a lot of them. And The Little Couple and Seven Little Johnstones are also shows featuring little people. And Peter Dinklage, he's an award-winning actor who plays Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones. Three, I have always wanted to be a teacher. In second grade, I was asked, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And it was then that I decided a teacher. And I never wavered. However, in first grade, I did want to be a dentist and a crossing guard. So anyway, through teaching, I learned the importance of children's literature and using characters, plot, and theme to teach in meaningful and powerful ways. So upon hearing about the structure of Brooke's body in the office at my second visit with the perinatologist, we were there to monitor his growth. And at that point, she could really only determine that my son had some sort of skeletal dysplasia. And I said this sounded consistent with achondroplasia. And she told me that the only way to determine this would be through a blood test after he was born. And we spoke to a genetic counselor before he was born as well, and they were trying to determine if this could have been caused by inherited genes, or because my husband and I are related, we are not, or a random genetic mutation. I mentioned that I would be sharing some very raw marital moments. Not only did my husband really not want a fourth child, but now we're looking at a baby with a random, this is where I cry, genetic mutation. The guilt I felt and still feel can be very overwhelming. And I learned a lot about my husband in the third trimester of our pregnancy. He Googled things like, "Can long bones grow rapidly in the third trimester? How accurate are ultrasound measurements?" And then he would discuss things with me like turning the downstairs bedroom into a place where Brooks could stay with his full-time caregivers. He toggled between, "Can this really be nothing?" and "How do we prepare for a child with special needs that may need full-time care?" He prayed every day for a son that wouldn't have a genetic condition or complications. And to be honest, I couldn't pray that prayer because I didn't want to be mad at God for not answering my prayer. And additionally, I learned that the divorce rate is even higher in families with children with disabilities, reaching 85 to 87%. Raw, real, and a very unexpected part of our journey in marriage, parenting, and life. I am thrilled to share with you that Brooks was born March 3rd, 2022. He's 3322, which is an awesome birthday. And he came into the world a very chonky 9 pounds even, 18 and a half inches long, and very loud. Here's a copy of his birth announcement. And on the back I wrote, fun fact, Brooks was born with dwarfism. He has achondroplasia. Achondroplasia is the most common form of short-limbed dwarfism. Over 80% of individuals born with this disorder are born to parents who do not have the disorder. It affects mainly the long bones. As a result, individuals who have achondroplasia have short limbs but normal trunk height and head size with a prominent forehead. This was a surprise to our family, and we are excited to learn more and support Brooks on his journey. To learn more about dwarfism, please visit the Little People of America website at lpaonline.org. And I'd love to share with you a poem I recently came across that spoke to my heart. It's called Welcome to Holland, and it's by Emily Pearl Kingsley, copyright 1987. I'm often asked to describe the experience of raising a child with a disability, to try and help people who have not shared that unique experience, to understand it, to imagine how it might feel. It's like this. When you're gonna have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make wonderful plans. You're gonna see the Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas in Venice. You learn some handy Italian phrases. And it's all very exciting. And after months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. And several hours later, the plane lands. And the flight attendant comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." "Holland? What?" you say. "What do you mean Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy? All my life I've dreamed of going to Italy." But there's been a change in the flight plan. They've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is that they haven't taken you to a horrible, filthy, disgusting place full of pestilence, famine, and disease. It's just a different place. So you must go out and buy new books, and you must learn a whole new language, and you will meet a whole new group of people you never would have met. It's just a different place. It's slower paced than Italy, less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a good while, you catch your breath, you look around, and you begin to notice that Holland has windmills, and Holland has tulips. Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy going to and from Italy, and they're bragging about what a wonderful time that they've had there, and for the rest of your life, you will say, "Yes, that is where I was supposed to go. That's what I had planned." And the pain of that will never, ever, ever go away, because the loss of that dream is a very significant loss. But if you spend your life mourning the fact that you didn't go to Italy, you may never feel free to enjoy the very special, the very lovely things about Holland. And it's a beautiful analogy of what raising a child with a disability looks like and feels like. I'm not totally certain I agree with the last part, that the pain will never, ever go away. Because when I look at Brooks, there's only joy in my heart and in his precious face. So when the term skeletal dysplasia is put into the Google search bar, it says, skeletal dysplasia is a category of rare genetic disorders that cause abnormal development of a baby's bones, joints, and cartilage. While skeletal dysplasia affects different parts of the body, in different children, the areas most affected include the legs, arms, rib cage, and spine. And then there's the next part of the results page that says, people also ask. And you click the little down arrow. Can a baby survive skeletal dysplasia? About half of fetuses with skeletal dysplasia are stillborn or die within the first 6 weeks of life. But not all children with skeletal dysplasias have severe medical problems. Many of these children can live relatively normal lives. Thank you, Google. And that was the starting point. And all we would know until we received the results from Brooks' genetic testing. Brooks was 1 day old when they took a blood sample and sent it off to our geneticist, and we were very fortunate to only need to wait a few days for the results. And I practiced hearing those words that I had been preparing myself for since finding out. And then I heard them, "Your son has achondroplasia." It knocked the wind out of me and lifted a weight off my shoulders at the same time. From the Johns Hopkins medical website, what is achondroplasia? It's a genetic condition affecting the protein in the body called the fibroblast growth factor receptor. In achondroplasia, this protein begins to function abnormally, slowing down the growth of the bone in the cartilage of the growth plate. This leads to shorter bones, abnormally shaped bones, and shorter stature. Adult height in people with achondroplasia is between 42 and 56 inches. Achondroplasia occurs in every 20,000 to 40,000 births. Talk about special. Although the cause is a genetic mutation, only about 1 in 5 cases is hereditary, meaning passed down by a parent, and it's possible for anyone in this room to have a baby with achondroplasia. What are the signs and symptoms? Large head with a large forehead, flattened nose and bridge, crowded or crooked teeth, short arms, legs, fingers, abnormal sized torso, upper arms and legs are shortened, bowed legs, curved lower spine, small hump near the top of the shoulders that usually goes away, flat feet, extra space between the middle and ring fingers, called a trident hand, think live long and prosper. Poor muscle tone, loose joints, short pulses of slower or stopped breathing, apnea, frequent ear infections, delayed motor developments, and small canals in the spinal bones that can cause breathing problems. It's a lot. So Jared and I took a breath, and we shared the diagnosis with family and friends, and then we dove in feet first. We got him lined up with specialists at Children's Hospital LA, and we started to reach out to build our tribe with other families and kids with dwarfism. As a reminder, the MOPS theme this year is We Go Together, and I needed community to find to go together. I joined many Facebook groups, so many Facebook groups. And then we joined the best thing ever, the Little People of America. From the LPA online website, Little People of America is a nonprofit organization that provides support and information to people of short stature and their families. And October is Dwarfism Awareness Month. Every October, Little People of America is honored to take pride in Dwarfism Awareness and Pride Month. Each year since its inception in 2011, LPA has supported honoring the diverse, beautiful, extraordinary lives of its community of individuals living with dwarfism. The following information comes from the second page of the press 2022, this year's press release. There are over 250 to 300 distinct forms of dwarfism, or skeletal, short-statured skeletal dysplasia. People with dwarfism are generally not taller than 4'10". And something that I learned recently was that you may have a friend who is 4'10", and they are not considered dwarf medically because it's a diagnosed condition. 80% of people with dwarfism have average height parents. There is an estimated 65,000 people in the United States and 1.4 million internationally with some form of dwarfism. In July 2009, the word midget was declared inappropriate and offensive. Advocates of the community are working towards achieving ultimate quality of life rather than growth velocity. They have 8,000 members across the United States, including 70 chapters. And LPA hosts a national conference each July, which draws more than 2,000 attendees. And we can't wait to go. My mom noticed, wow, there's like a lot of socializing. I'm like, from what I hear, it's a party. And it has come to my attention that I can be very socially awkward, so I would love to share with you some awkward moments that have happened so far. We told our kids soon after Brooks was born that he has dwarfism. And we started with picture books, and we showed them pictures of kids their age with dwarfism, and a few video clips for reference. Brooks was born on March 3rd, and my mom's birthday is March 12th. So Brooks was only a few days old when we took a field trip to Crystal Court at South Coast Plaza for a few errands and to buy my mom a birthday present. I ducked into La Occitane and left Jared the double stroller and the girls outside the store. I grabbed my gift set and I headed to the cash wrap. And as I'm walking to the back of the store, the girls run in and they're like, "Mom, there's a little person out there." They run out of the store. They are ecstatic. They are jumping up and down. They run back in. The lady at the cash register has rung up the gift set. She has given me quite the side eye. She asks if I need a gift receipt. I do. She asks if I want it wrapped. I do. She asks if I'm on the mailing list. I don't know. So I give her a phone number. No, not that one. Do you have another one? I give her another phone number. No, not that one. Do you have like an email address? No. So I finally say no and we move on. And meanwhile, the older gentleman with achondroplasia has approached my husband. The girls are ecstatic and they run back in the store and they are pulling on my arm. You know this move. Because the interaction inside is taking forever, the conversation outside has lasted longer than like a few pleasantries. So the gift is finally wrapped, handed to me over the counter, and I walked out of the store. I walk outside sounding like Cinderella, "Hi!" And he looks at me like perplexed, but mentions how like full my hands must be with four small children. And I say something awkward about like, "Yeah, I only have two hands and they have eight, but I only need four because you hold one of their hands." Like, shut up. And my husband says, "Go Raiders," and he says, "Go Niners," and we walk away. And we're headed across the aisle, the hallway, the whatever, to Starbucks. And my husband looks at me and he goes, "Well, I didn't tell him." "You didn't tell him? You have one job, Jared, one job." Like, it would have cleared so many things up to this poor gentleman. So we're working on that. And as soon as we joined the Little People of America, we booked a reservation to our first regional conference in Santa Clara. Brooks was only 2 months old at this point, and as soon as we pulled into the parking lot, we knew we were in the right place. As we were checking in, I noticed that stools were placed at the front desk, making check-in more accessible to everyone, which also made me wonder if there's always stools available at hotels when checking in. But in the lobby, I saw where the registration table was, and Jared took the bags upstairs, and I wheeled the stroller over to the table. And as I was learning all about the schedule of events and getting the welcome packet and name tags, I heard Brooks starting to fuss behind me. And this was a very thorough check-in, and with many pieces of paper, and as Brooks was just starting to make a little bit more noise, behind me I hear he's going, "Meow, meow, meow." I hear this chorus of, "Oh, it's a baby! He's the cutest little one we've ever seen. Where's his pacifier?" And I turn around to this like swarm of little women around my stroller, peering up and over, and with one last paper to sign, and like my heart so full, I hear them whisk my stroller away. I'll catch up with you later, okay. So turn and tell the person next to you a sign or two of achondroplasia symptoms that you learned. No, like right now, like you turn and talk. Turn and talk to the person next to you. What is something you've learned this morning so far? This is like the teacher moment. Now I get to teach. I heard such lovely answers. Thank you. And back to me in 3, 2, 1, teacher. And now you know the definition of dwarfism, what it looks like according to the medical jargon, but like, what does it mean? Many people want to know what they should call a person with dwarfism. By their name. By their name. But also, if you don't know their name, as a rule of thumb, when it comes to referring to anyone with a medical condition, always start with the person first. For example, my son with dwarfism puts the person first, followed by the diagnosis. My dwarf son places the emphasis on the condition rather than the person. So always think person first, then description. In terms of dwarfism, appropriate terminology includes little person, LP, a person born with dwarfism, or short stature. Little people may refer to themselves as dwarves. That's kind of on them, that's their choice. Midget is considered an unacceptable term due to its history and derogatory use, and the term used to reference your own height is average height. Okay. Have you ever been in public and your child, or maybe you've overheard someone else's child or your child has said something super cringy? I'll go first. Mommy, look at that girl. She's so big. Oh my gosh, my first instinct, and I'm sure all of us are like, shh. I took a breath, and thankfully, the character Mina from the movie Sing popped into my mind, and I was able to remind my precious and very unfiltered daughter that bodies come in all shapes and sizes, and her fate, like just like her favorite character from the movie, Mina's size never stopped her from doing what she loved, and she had to overcome stage fright, but when she did, she tore the house down, like literally, but it was awesome. But what I'm getting at is that I know throughout Brooke's life, he will hear questions asked about his height. Maybe why his head's big, maybe about his hands. And if caregiving adults are proactive in the lessons they teach during a young child's life, these conversations can look and sound very different. Let's all start by pausing a moment. Maybe holding off on that. But reminding ourselves that children are naturally curious, and they ask questions when they just pop into their heads. And they aren't embarrassed by their questions, so maybe we don't have to be either. And there are so many ways to handle these situations. But let's say, for example, your child sees my son, Brooks, on the playground and asks you, Mommy, why is that little boy so small? And if the opportunity is there, respond with, let's ask. Prep your child to ask with kindness and curiosity. And most of the time, people will appreciate the interest and will answer with the same kindness. I know I'm already practicing my response and how to help Brooks respond in the future as well. Which brings me to this book, Just Ask, by Sonia Sotomayor. Feeling different, especially as a kid, can be tough. But in the same way that different types of plants and flowers make a garden more beautiful and enjoyable, different types of people make our world more vibrant and wonderful. Just Ask. In Just Ask, United States Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor celebrates the difference, the different abilities kids and people of all ages have, using her own experience as a child who was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. Justice Sotomayor writes about children with all sorts of challenges and looks at the special powers those kids have as well. As the kids work together to build a community garden, asking questions of each other along the way, this book encourages readers to do the same. When we come across someone who is different from us, but we're not really sure why, all we have to do is ask. And in her letter, which is the blur up there, she writes, I was born on June 25th, 1954, and in 1961, when I was 7 years old, I was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. To take care of myself, I had to do things other kids did not. Sometimes I felt different. And when kids saw me giving myself a needle shot of insulin, my medicine, I knew they were curious about what I was doing. But they never asked me, my parents, or my teachers about it, so I often felt like I was doing something wrong. And as I grew older, I realized that there are many ways to be, that I was not alone in feeling different. I wanted to write this book to explain how differences make us stronger in a good way. Like my experiences with diabetes, the challenges some kids can face can be very hard and sometimes frustrating. Some of us have conditions that require medicines or tools to make us to manage things that other kids never have to deal with. Some of our difficulties are not even visible to others, but they make us feel different, and we may do things that others don't understand. Yet all of these challenges often give us strength that others cannot imagine. I hope by seeing yourself or your friends in this story, you will understand that we are all different, and you will find that notion comforting and empowering. I hope, too, that you will recognize what we have in common. Instead of fearing our differences or ignoring them, we can shed light on them and explore them together. If you ever wonder why someone is doing something different from other kids, just ask. Sonia Sotomayor. The following pages introduce each of the friends, starting with Sonia. And I love the illustration because she actually has her injection. And at the end of each page is a thoughtful question. And the book includes Raphael, who has asthma. And there's his inhaler. Madison has a guide dog. Arturo uses a cane because they are blind. Valle uses sign language because he's deaf. Bianca is dyslexic. Jordan and Tiana have autism. An speaks with a stutter. Julia wiggles around and makes sounds because she has Tourette syndrome. The book ends with a reminder to reader to ask questions of their parents or teachers if their friends aren't ready to explain. And the book closes with the question, what will you do with your power? It's a beautifully written book, and the pictures are absolutely lovely. And it did occur to me that Brooks isn't represented in this diverse garden of children. And one day, hopefully sooner than later, I will create a page. I will support Brooks in his journey and write him in his own page in the book. I will create a page with words and pictures for him to be included. And this very special publication of the book, including my son, will not make it to anyone else's copy. But the importance of my son seeing himself represented in literature is way more important. Where can your child be represented in the books you have at home? Without overthinking this, I want you to close your eyes and think of your favorite children's book, like the book that you asked your adults to read over and over and over again. While your eyes are closed, I want you to think about your child's favorite book, the book that they've asked you to read over and over and over again. Turn and tell the person next to you the titles of the two books that came to mind. Go, yeah. Back to me in three, back to me in two, eyes on me in one. As for me and my favorite book, Goodnight Moon by Margaret Weiss Brown, classic. My oldest daughter loved the pigeon books, specifically Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus by Mo Willems. Hollis wanted to read Princess Baby by Karen Katz, and Shelby can't go to sleep without tucking the trucks in at the construction site by reading Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site by Sherry Dusty Rinker. Dusky Rinker. Think of the children's books that you have at home in your own personal library. Maybe it's a small cluster of books in a bin in your child's room, or maybe it's multiple shelves or an entire wall full of books. But how else can you access books? Local libraries? Digitally? Do your children have access to books featuring characters of different color, ethnicity, ability? Who do the characters in your children's books represent? Are any of them little people? I would love to share with you one of my all-time favorite characters, Molly Lou Mellon, created by Patty Lovell, and illustrated by David Ketro. This is Speak Up, Molly Lou Mellon. Like, this is actual story time. Molly Lou Mellon was a tiny little girl with a big, deep down heart. Her mom always told her, be true to yourself. So, she was. Molly Lou Mellon tried to do the right things in her life, but it didn't always work. And her mom always told her, take responsibility for the things you do, good or bad. So, she did. I realize that half of you can't see the pictures, it's fine. Molly Lou Mellon had friends of all shapes and sizes, opinions and ideas, and her mom always told her, accept people for who they are and listen to their ideas, even if they are different from yours. Say it with me. So she did. Molly Lou Mellon had a loud voice, and she chatted, jabbered, and gabbed all the time with her friends. And her mom always told her, you have a strong voice. Use it to speak up for anyone who might need your help. On the count of three, one, two, three. In the fall, Molly Lou Mellon started school again with a big yellow backpack and a huge toothy grin for her, all of her friends. She sat with Ronald Durkin and Gertie in the front row of their classroom. Bettina Bonklehead snickered at them and cooed, Molly Lou Mellon and Ronnie, kissy kissy boyfriend, girlfriend. Molly Lou Mellon stood up and told her, we are friends. And then she exchanged special handshakes with Gertie and Ronald. Woodle woodle ding ding, cha cha waddle doo. In the winter, Molly Lou Mellon had to be project partners with Bettina Bonklehead. They accidentally painted all over the desks and not their papers. That's mine. It was a little fun. When the teacher asked who did it, Molly Lou Mellon said, me, and had to spend recess cleaning the desks. Bettina said nothing and played a great game of pirate outside. But Molly Lou Mellon was mad at first, but then she played her own thrilling game of swabbing the decks. Well, desks. In spring, a new boy came. A new boy named Garvin Grape started school. He was small, he wore glasses, and his ears stuck out, and he told the class all about Newton's law of gravity in a long speech at the front of the room. Bettina Bonklehead had rolled her eyes, sneered at Garvin, and said, big deal. Really loudly, Garvin's cheeks turned bright red, and he hung his head. Molly Lou Mellon raised her hand and said, yes! Gravity is a big deal. And then she scribbled a little note and handed it to Garvin. It read, welcome to our school. Nice speech. Join us on the playground at recess. We can test out some gravity. Woodle woodle ding ding, cha cha waddle doo. Molly Lou, Gertie, Ronald Durkin. On the first day of summer, Bettina Bonklehead showed up at camp and promptly stuck her foot out, tripping Garvin Grape. He crashed to the ground and his glasses went flying. Bettina grinned and chirped, smarty pants, look like gravity gotcha. Molly Lou Mellon caught Garvin's glasses in midair and went nose to nose with Bettina and said, you must never do anything like that again to my friend. Friends stand up for one another. Ronald stepped forward and so did Gertie, waving her crutch. They pulled Garvin Grape up, linked arms, and did the four friends shouted, woodle woodle ding ding, cha cha waddle doo. If you want to be a friend, it's all up to you. And the last illustration is Bettina handing Garvin an apple. I have been reading the Molly Lou Mellon books for years. Stand Tall, Molly Lou Mellon, the first book by the author, became an instant favorite when I ordered it for my first grade classroom years ago. And I was sure to include Molly Lou Mellon in our classroom conversations when talking about being yourself, standing up for what is right, and having as much fun as possible along the way. It was no question I would be reading these books to my kids, too. In an interview with the author, Patti Lavelle was asked, what do you hope readers get from the book? And in her words, she says, "I won the state book award 1 year. I went down there and I spoke at the University of Georgia. And afterwards, after my speech, I was surrounded by people telling me that they enjoyed the book. The last person standing there was a man about 35 years old. He was crying. And he said, my book really affected his young son, who was very short, like Molly Lou, and that it changed his son's life, and that it made him so proud." And she's like saying this, choking back tears. "And he gave me a big hug, and I hope kids can find inspiration like that through this book." Molly Lou Mellon is an example of a character that rides with us on the way to school, enters our dinner conversations, and someone we include at nighttime when tucking in our kids. Characters in books are powerful. We can invite them in and learn from them and the choices that they make. And each time you read to your children, you're experiencing something new. With every page turned, it's a way to navigate through tough conversations. You can travel the world with the comfort of your rocking chair. The right books and characters help shape who your child wants to be friends with, and how to recognize kindness and unkindness too. And the right books can inspire your children to want to have cool and unique jobs when they grow up. That being said, kick the characters out who don't serve you or your family well. Junie B. Jones just got the boot from our house. It's my help that through the joy, my hope that through the joy of children's books, you can find characters that teach and educate your children about kids of all kinds. This way, when they see someone like my son on the playground, the first question that they want to ask is, "Do you want to play with me?" On your tables, you will see green wristbands, an excellent conversation starter about Dwarfism Awareness Month, and I've included some discussion questions and for some books for you to peruse. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey and giving you a little perspective to our Pellissier journey.